much hoping that I've got the right page, which is Chaf Tet in Shabbat. Is that right? Good. Baruch Hashem. And the question is, I was assuming, I can go back a little bit, but I was assuming that you learned until the two dots about five or six lines down to Rav Shimon v'Chachamim Omrim, Rav Shimon v'Chachamim Omrim Gimel Mechuv Anot. Did you get to that or did you not get to that? Okay. So I'll tell you what, we'll finish up. Let's start from there, because it is kind of a new place to yeah. Video. And then at the end, we should be finished by 8 o'clock. It's not a decent amount of Gemara. We'll see how fast we get through it. But we could always backtrack and do that little piece afterwards, since it's not directly connected to what we were doing beforehand. At least I don't think so. Okay, so the Gemara starts, Amar Rav Yehuda. So I'm going to get the right page, so I the art scroll ready just in case I need it. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar. You want me to sit over there? It would be easier if I sat over there.
Wherever you come.
I feel bad because you kind of turn. Yeah, I think it's probably. I think it'll give everybody a better vision. I apologize. Okay. Now ready to go. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Masikin bekalim ve'in masikin b'shivrei kalim. You're allowed to burn on Yom Tov. Kalim are utensils. Ve'ein mesikim b'shivrei kalim. They're not allowed to use broken pieces of utensils to burn in your oven. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Shimon Mati. Rav Shimon says that you can use kalim and shivrei kalim. It doesn't matter, and I believe that's because Rav Shimon doesn't hold by muksa. Rav Shimon just doesn't hold by muksa. We don't pass him like Rav Shimon on Yom Tov. Rav Shimon says that as long as you can find some use for it, then you can use it. Okay.
What do you want to burn kalim?
I think like a wood pot, like a wood, like pieces of wood. Like, let's say a wood cup, so it shatters. So I take the wood cup and I throw it into the oven and I let it go. And also,
to burn it as a fuel.
As a fuel, yeah, that's correct.
So, but a full cup, you can't.
I could toss that, yeah. It's like you ever been in Israel.
You know.
That's correct. It's like you ever been in Yom Tov, say you ever been in Lag B'Omer in Israel, so they take like entire like sofas and throw it into the fire. So that type of thing. I don't know if that's because their parents want
them to. The other way around, because a full cup is a useful kit.
Yeah, which means that it's not muksa.
So you wouldn't use it for fuel. But
I'm allowed to cook it. I'm allowed to cook on Yom Tov. The cup is not muksa, so I'm fine. It's only the broken cup, which is considered muksa, like a rock, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, I'm not allowed to use it for fuel because I'm not allowed to pick it up and touch it. And according to Rabbi Shimon, this doesn't hold by muksa. I mean, it's not that he doesn't hold for mux at all, but he feels that anything that has some use, even if you don't discover that use until Yom Tov or Shabbat, that would not be considered mux. So he says in Gemara Beitza, lo, or so, or maybe Shabbat, lo maxi inshi midaite midi de something la. The person never is mux to something that he might have some theoretical use for. Yeah. I'm getting a phone call, but I'm not going to take it, but if you don't mind, I'd just like to look and see if it's my wife. If it is, then it's an emergency. I have no idea who that is, so it doesn't matter. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Masikim B'Kalim, Ve'im Masikim B'Shivrei Kalim, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Shimon Matir. Masikim B'Tamarim, I'm allowed to burn dates. Achlan, but if I ate them, Ein Masikim B'Garinehem, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, I'm not allowed to use their pits to use. Because Rabbi Yehuda feels that they're muksa because they were not available to, because essentially pits of dates are useless. I can't do anything with them. They're muksa, like rocks. And therefore, I can't do them. Rabbi Shimon Mati. Of course, Rabbi Shimon is Mati, so Rabbi Shimon couldn't care less about muksa in these circumstances. He just doesn't hold by it. Masikin be'egozim, I'm allowed to burn nuts. I hope that's not an insult to somebody who's involved in, it seems like a waste of nuts, to be perfectly honest. But you're not allowed to. Once you shell them, you're not allowed to burn them. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Shimon Matir. Again, Rav Shimon couldn't care less about it. He doesn't hold by muksa, and therefore it just doesn't bother him. Vitzrichan, I need all three cases. The three cases were the broken pieces of vessel, the date pits which were uncovered on Yom Tov, and the egozim shells which were left over after you ate the egozim, the walnuts or something like that, or whatever kind of. Diyashmin and Kamaita, if I had only learned about the utensils that were broken, Bahi Kama Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum Demekar Kli, Vahasha Shever Kli. That Rabbi Yehuda says that the reason why it's Muksa is because once upon a time it had a good use. It broke on Yom Tov, so it has a din of nolad. That is, it literally, I can't, all of a sudden, bang, I got something which is brand new and I can't use it. It's Muksa. And therefore, since it once had one complete status, once upon a time I called it a Kli, now I call it a piece of garbage. Therefore, it's a brand new thing, and therefore it's Muksa. V'havi le nolad, and therefore it's a brand new thing, v'asar, aval tamarin d'meikar garina, v'hasta garina ema shapir dami. But it could be Rabbi Yehuda who holds that breaking a vessel, if a vessel is broken, I can't use that to burn, but maybe the pits of a fig I can, because they existed. The fact that I couldn't get into them is my problem, but it's not like they weren't around. It's not nolad. They were around beforehand.
So was the pieces of the kli?
No, it wasn't, because when Yom Tov came in, it was an actual kli. That's the difference. It was actually a kli. You could argue that the pieces of the kli were made up, the part of the kli, but I think that there you're really changing, you know. Let's put it this way. If I can't, it loses its shame. It loses its name. If I break apart a kli and it's just a bunch of pieces of glass, nobody looks at it and says, oh, what a lovely piece of broken cup you have. Well, they say what you have is a bunch of broken pieces of glass. It no longer has the name of kli. It's really a brand new entity. But by the date, the pits were there. So I might think, since that's not really nolad, because really they were there all along, then Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbi Shimon that there's no problem of muksa. So the answer is wrong. Because I couldn't get to the olive pit, because I couldn't get to the date pits, therefore they're considered just as muksa as if I had created something brand new on Yom Tov. The Iyashmin and Garinon, and if I had only learned about the fig, that the date pits, Havia Mida Demei Karim Achasim Ahashim Egalim. The reason why Rabbi Yehuda says get your hands off those date pits, don't use them, is because you couldn't get to them. They were inside, covered up, unavailable, and therefore when they become available, that would be like the mail coming in perhaps on Shabbat type of thing, although that's probably a bad example because the mail may have been in the post office already. Well, let's take an example of something that really falls out, something that you had available to you, it just happened to require some uncovering to get to. But of a klipia goes in, but the klipia goes on the outside. That is, I could get to them. Just happens to be that on the inside of them, they were right there in front of me. It was the inside of the things that I ate, not the outside of things. And therefore, v'hashta miglu. So therefore, since they were uncovered, and now that, since by these it goes, and they were always uncovered, v'hashta miglu, and now they're equally uncovered. That is, they're always on the outside, whether they have nuts in them or not. Same as shapadami. So then I would say Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbi Shimon that they're not muksa. So the Gemara says, sricha, that's wrong. In all three cases, muksa would apply according to Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of nolad, in the case where you are uncovered, and even in the case where it's available to you, but you simply have something which is now unfunctional and useless. Therefore, muksa still kicks in. But in all those cases, Rav Shimon is matir, even by nolad. V'hadarav. Now they're saying, now, if you remember, Rav is the one who mentioned this whole case. V'hadarav la beferush itman. He wasn't actually quoting anything. That is, if you take a look at the top, it says, I'm a Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Rav. Rav said the following, and then he brought the following case. So the truth is, Rav never brought any case whatsoever. Rav did something which made Rav Yehuda, now that's not Rebbe Yehuda, that's Rav Yehuda. You have to be careful here. Rav Yehuda was quoting Rav, quoting Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Shimon. Okay? Here is, now we're saying that Rav Yehuda, the Amora, wasn't really quoting Rav, doing something, he was quoting a story that happened to Rav, which winds up with the same results. So it follows. V'had Rav Lav Purusha Itmar Ela Mechlala Itmar. It was a case, actually, that he learned from Rav, and it wasn't a quote of Rav. Just a second. Let me just see if Rashi has a better translation of that. Yeah, okay, that's essentially what it means. So Gemara says, El Mechalimah, he was talking about a case that he saw happen to Rav. What was it? Derav Achel Tamre. Rav was eating dates. Veshada Kashaita Lebuche. And he threw the pits into a fire. Now this, according to Rashi, was done on a chol. Let's take a look at Rashi, about 10 lines up from where it is, says Achel Tamre B'chol. What's that? Because the rest of the Gemara wouldn't make sense unless it was chol. Yeah. So a lot of times we think Rashi is brilliant, which he was, but sometimes his brilliant is merely patience. He patiently waits to see what the Gemara has to say, and then he goes back to what he didn't understand and redoes what he understood. So there's a little bit of brilliance also, right? So Achol Tav Rishad Kusha LeBuchia. So Amar Lei Rabbi Chia. So Chia says Bar Pachde. Hey you wise man. Let's just translate it that way for now. Kinegdo B'Yom Tov Aser. Had you done that kind of thing on Yom Tov, it would have been Aser. Now according to Rabbi, that's where the case ends. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the fact that Rav sat there and didn't say anything, that proves that Rav accepted this idea, and therefore Rav paskins like Rabbi Yehuda and not like Rabbi Shimon. He paskins that Muksa applies on Yom Tov, as in all these three cases, as opposed to Rabbi Shimon, who fears that Muksa does not apply to Yom Tov. The Gemara says, wait, hold on, just a cotton pick a name. Kivlimine or lo kivlimine? Are you sure that he accepted from him, or are you sure he's not an exception? That is, can we really, how do I know whether he accepted or he didn't accept? They call that an argument in silencio. Are you quite sure, just because he didn't say anything in that case, that he accepted him? So we have a klal in the Gemara, of course, that shtika ko dama dami, that silence is like acceptance. It's not always true. An argument in silencio is a difficult thing. So we're saying, tashma, come and listen. I'm going to be able to decide whether he accepts it or not. The chiyata Rav, I got another story about Rav. Lichata Bava Babel. Rav came to Babel. Achol tamrei v'shada kushis l'chiyuta. So this was on Yom Tov, apparently, by the way. On Yom Tov, he was eating tamarim, and he threw the pits l'chevata. Right, we say that, what's that song on Shabbat that we say with the word chevata? Ofe Shmaya v'chevat, what did I write? V'chevat debara? That's in Yari Bon Olam. Chevat debara and Ofe Shmaya, so chevat are animals. So my love, b'farsiyata v'lo kiblel. So therefore I can prove that he never accepted such a thing. We see him throwing these pits on Yom Tov that he ate the tamar off of into the fire. Therefore it must be that he doesn't accept it. But that would only apply as if these were parsiatas. What that means is there are two types of tamarin. And by the way, the best way to give an example of these would be a stone peach and a non-stone peach. You know, stone peaches you eat and they come right off the doesn't stick to the pit. You got this lovely pit that you could suck on for days and days and days, right? But then you got these ones where you're like, you chew and chew, and there's always like a decent amount of goop, and you're always trying to get it off, and it's impossible. Those I call the annoying peaches. Like, you know, getting a stone peach, that's a great thing to get. So here you have like a stone, date, which is called a parsiata, and therefore what happens? When you eat the date off, you got nothing left but the pit. And therefore, if I could throw the pit into the fire, that proves that it's not muksa. But the Gemara says, nah, you can't prove anything. Look, because it's bar miyata. It was not with a parsiata tamar. It was an armiata tamar, which is one where it gets stuck, like where you got food stuck on the pit. And ho b'chazi agavi mayo. Therefore, it's good on its mom. I believe that's how you translate that, which means, since I have a little bit of food still left on the pit, therefore it is good. I could throw it's not muksa because I could still eat it. It's not, and then I could throw the whole thing into the. I could throw the whole thing into the fire. By the way, this reminds me of something I asked Rav Lichtenstein when I was in the Gush. So we had cases of watermelons with pits. So Israelis don't have a problem with this when it comes to borer, because borer, if you pick out the watermelon pits, you got a problem with borer. So if you're Israeli, you don't have a problem, because Israelis eat the whole thing with the pits. So then you got no issue whatsoever, right? That's it. You ever see an Israeli eat a watermelon? The whole thing's going down. Okay, you worry about everything later. It's not an issue. But Americans don't do that. They pick out the pits. So I asked Rav Lichtenstein what to do, because I told him I didn't want to eat the pits. So he said, what you do is when you pick out the pits, you pick out a little bit of meat with it. Because they're not doing borer. You're taking good and bad. So here, similarly, you got muksa. This may be more of a case of busis from Dabar Asr. So I remember I was walking on... Yeah, you got to take some of the meat with it, right? So that avoids a problem. This is a little different. This has to do with muksa. So this is a little bit closer to the idea of muksa basis the davar muksa, and a basis the davar is not muksa. For example, if I have a candelabra sitting on a dining table, I got all kinds of problems. But let's say it's sitting on one of those plates, platters that people put their candles on. So the tray was a basis the davar muksa, because I can't touch the candles, I can't touch the tray. But if I left a piece of bread on the tray when Shabbat came in, so it's now a basis the davar mutar and a basis the davar aser, and therefore when the candles burn out and there's no longer a muksa problem, I can now lift up the tray and lift the whole thing. And a similar issue, by the way, does that sound strange?
I've seen it done.
Yeah. You know what people do all the time?
No
keys.
Sense to me.
Well, it's a basis. It's a, the question is, does a basis get contaminated? The basis isn't muksa by itself. It gets contaminated by that which is resting on it.
But one thing is, if it happens, like you eating the dead
and
saying
it's a
piece
of trick.
The meat stays on the pit.
So you're saying it's
a
trick.
And one thing is to do it intentionally so it can move the... I mean, come on.
Well,
the kid that sees that you move the candelabra off the table or off whatever because there's a piece of bread on it, how in the world can you explain that?
I see what you're saying.
I can't understand.
I see what you're saying. Okay. This is a heter. It's certainly not a requirement. A really weird one comes up when Chas Rachman Flan, somebody dies on Shabbat, so theoretically you're supposed to move the body. Right. Put a piece of bread on. And that, I have to tell you, that is a weird, that's a weird kind of thing. I know it's the way that it's done because you know what, depending on where the body lies, let's say if it dies only on Shabbat, you can really have issues. The body's not supposed to lie on the ground on after it dies. You have to pick up the body. But the reason why that's true is because back in the day, if you left it on the ground, it would get eaten. So you had to lift it off the ground to make sure that it wasn't, by anything, right, by things that came around, and they smelled the body and carrying it, and they went for it. So today, the question is, do people still do it today? But I'm not sure. I don't know. People do it. People put bread on a body so they can move the body on Shabbat, but it's a little bit strange, to be honest, because I don't know, it's a little bit strange. That's the kind of thing that would turn off little kids. You know, let's put a piece of bread on our dead relatives. That's a little bit weird. But
David went to be a shaman the other day at the daughter's.
Yeah.
And the body they had put on the floor, and he asked me why. I said I don't know. The last time I sat shaman, the body was
on the floor? On the floor? On the floor? Not in a coffin? Or the coffin was on the floor?
No, the floor. No, the person passed away, and they needed the shomer until they come and take the body.
It was out? Not
it
in the
was
refrigerator?
On the floor.
They usually have a big refrigerator.
No, no refrigerator. In the room that passed
away. Oh, no, that's not right.
On the floor.
I shouldn't say it's not right. Ask
I mean, I don't... I never saw such
I would ask Rabbi Zwickler what's going on. That's a very strange thing.
Yeah.
First of all, it's gross, but it's a little bit uncomfortable for the shomer.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure you could say the question. Can you say till him then if you're right in front of the
dead
body?
Fell, I don't know.
I mean, it sounds weird. I would speak to Rabbi Zwickler about it. It doesn't sound right to me. It's not anything I'm familiar with. Anyway, I'm sorry. We got off.
No,
my apologies. I started the whole
learning.
Thing.
You're learning.
Anyway, so this was the case of the. So here you have a little bit of meat on, so therefore it's okay. Gemara, we are now. Sorry, I got us lost. We're across from the Tosfot that says V'had Durav. Does everybody see that? It's the second Tosfot from the bottom.
Yeah.
If you go to the right, so you see Amalei Rav Shmuel bar Rav Chana le Rav Yosef. So Rav Shmuel bar Chana says Rav Yosef. He says, Li Rav Yehuda, according to Rav Yehuda, Dama Masikim Bekenem Eim Masikim Beshir Bekenem. So he says you're allowed to burn cups, but you're not allowed to burn shards of cups. Kevan De'idlik Behu Purta, once it gets on fire a little bit, Habile Shivre Kelim. The Chiyicha Mahapech, and when you flip it over, it'd be Surka Mahapech. So you see what's going on? That is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, I got a problem anyway. I take a whole cup and I throw it in the fire. In about 5 minutes, it's not going to be a whole cup. It's going to be a broken cup. So therefore, how could I then stick in? Apparently, what they used to do is they used to stick in the, like a thing to turn over the coals on the bottom. How can you turn those things over the coals? Because once the cups disintegrate into pieces of cups, the whole work should be usher, so it's not good for you anyway. You're not going to be able to have a functional oven anyway. So the Gemara says, does that make sense? So something that wasn't muksa turns into muksa, and now you're hosed. So the Gemara says, "David Krav Kedarav Mana." So we did like Rav Mana. The Rav Mana, I'm a Rav Eitim Shnishum Minadeka. By the way, it's a famous case when you're learning, when you're studying for the rabbinate. This is a famous case. Eitim Shnishum Minadeka. If I have wood that fell off of a palm tree on Yom Tov, Litanur, and they fell directly into the oven.
Yeah, the oven
was right under. So yeah. Why not? Sure, absolutely. Yeah, or they bounced. You know, they could have bounced.
Yeah.
There's another time. Biyom Tov. Marbe Eitzim Muchanim Umasikin. You're allowed to take more wood, throw it on top of the original wood, which becomes Batel Barov. And now I can move them around because, the reason why I can move them around is because now I've got Mutter stuff on my Usher stuff. This gets into a big issue. What if I drop milk accidentally into a Cholim pot that only has 40 times the milk? Am I allowed to add in an extra 20 times of meat on purpose to get rid of the milk? So the answer is the answer is no. And then the question is, why here by these trees is it okay? So a few reasons. One is, here we're talking about muksa. We're not talking about bishul because we're talking about yom tov. But you should know something. It's drabbanan. According to the Mechaber, if you're Sfaradi, you are allowed to. So let's say I drip in a milk into 40 times the amount of chicken, which is only an issur rabbanan. According to the Mechaber, I could add in another 20 times the chicken, even though we Ashkenazim, the Ramah says, asar. But there is an idea that if something accidentally becomes pseudo-batel, I could add more to be batel. Here, the reason why it's makil to do something like that is because the issur is not the araisa, it's only the rabbanan anyway. That's one reason why this is okay to do.
What's that? Also, or just chicken?
That would, anything that's drabanan for Sephardi. Mm-hmm. If it's meat, you couldn't, because that's the right thing. You're not allowed to add in the isser.
That's
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, sorry, I couldn't get you out of everything. But and again, ask your rabbinic authority about all these cases. So, Rav Hamnuna Amar, period. That's the end of that. So, essentially, it's very interesting. By the way, another reason why you may be able to do this is because when the trees fell off the dekel, it wasn't the first, when the wood fell off the branches into the oven, it wasn't the first branches. There were already branches inside. Therefore, when I'm being mevatel them by adding in new branches, which were already prepared before Yom Tov, it wasn't that I was starting from zero. There were already prepared branches in there because it was a fire in the oven already, right? There was clearly a fire in the oven. So I already have, let's say, 20 beams inside, which are perfectly fine. Falls in 25 new beams directly from a tree. Now I got a problem because you can't be batel because it's not rov. In this case, because it's drabanan, I'm allowed to now add in more trees which are prepared to mevavatel the old trees. So apparently that was going on. Apparently what you would do is even Rabbi Yehuda allow you to throw in the cups. The cups were going to be turned into broken cups. You keep throwing in new cups, I guess, to make sure that you always have enough new material, and therefore the old material stays batel with the new material. Okay? That's the end of the Gemara, brand new Gemara. Is that okay, or am I rushing too fast for this idea? I'm sorry, I don't have graphics with branches and stuff like that. It would make it much more clear. Okay, Rav Hamnuna, we're going back to the original issue, which is what is our Mishnah talking about? Based on what we've studied up to now, the Mishnah was talking about where I have exactly a 3x3 finger square, and therefore by making a wick out of the 3x3 square, I reduce it beyond the 3x3 level, turning it into a non-kli, and therefore the question is it tameh or is it not tameh? Can it be used or can it not be used? So Rav Huna says no. Amar hakab bakod, I'm sorry. Rav Huna says it's exactly right. Amar hakab bakod mishlosa shlosha skinan. Umikule matninan, oh, I'm sorry. He says, we're not talking about a case of 3x3 where if I take the wick and I bend it, I'm making it less 3x3. And then it's a whole question of nola. Did I just create a new wick or did I not create a new wick or did I create a new thing? No, that's not what's going on. Meikara, the whole thing was less than 3x3. It was a little piece of cloth, yay big. The question is, it was always a shivrei keli. And the question is, can I twist it up and use it? So, Rav Huna Amar Hakam Pachom Shlosh Shlosh Shaskinon. Umikule Matlinon Shanukan. What we're talking about is a case. So if it's less than 3x3, it's not a keli. And if it's not a keli, I'm not creating something new when I twist it into a beg it on a teal on Shabbat. And not only that, it's never makabel tuma because nobody would say it's a kli. The question was, if it's 3x3 and it's a kli, according to Rabbi Akiva, if I reduce it from 3x3, it's no longer a kli, because I made a wick out of it. According to Rabbi Lezer, no, once it was a kli, it was always a kli, and therefore, it's still, even though I turned a wick out of it and I reduced it from 3x3, it still has an entire range of 3x3, therefore it's still a kli, and makabel tuma, I can't use it. According to Rabbi Hamnuna, that's not the case. It's never 3x3. If it's never 3x3, then how come it's makabel tuma? It can't be makabel tuma. It's not a kli. If it can't be makabel tuma, there should be no problem with using it as a wick on Yom Tov. Everybody follow what the case? Then the question is, according to Rabbi Lezer, how could Rabbi Lezer say it's usher when it was never a kli? It's not makabel tuma. Rabbi Elazar, the time he goes according to his reasons. Rabbi Kiva, the time A. Why? We learned in another case. The Tanah, Pachom, Shlosha, Shlosha, Shet, Kino, Lepkak, Bo, Et, Amerchat. So what if I had less than a 3x3 cloth? And I used it to stick up the drain of the shower, of the bath. Ulvanayar, Bo, Et, Akadera, and also to shake up the pot. I guess the pot was hot, and it was like a little piece of cloth, and you used it, happens all the time in my house. I can't find the hot gloves. So I used whatever little tiny thing I could find, and I used it to lift up the pot. Well, the kaneach bot rechaim, and also to wipe off the millstones. So according to Eliezer, I'm turning these into a kli. That is, yeah, you could argue that something's less than 3x3 is not a kli unless you use it as a kli. If you use it as a functional kli, then it's a kli. I don't care what size it is. It could be a millimeter wide by a millimeter long. Well, I don't know about that, but it doesn't have to be 3x3. So Gemara says ben. So Rabbi Eliezer says ben minamucha ben sheina minamucha tame. Whether it's ready or whether it's not ready, it's tame. Now we don't know what ben minamucha and ben not minamucha is yet. Let's just assume that in all cases, whether you readied it for this job, whether you didn't ready it for this job, since it was used for this job once, therefore it would be considered a kli. Rabbi Yehoshua goes all the way the other way and he says no. Omer ben minamucha ben shloma minamucha. Whether you have it prepared for reuse, or whether you do not have it prepared for reuse, it is never considered a kli, because essentially it's less than 3x3. I don't care whether you used it for a functional kli before. Right now it's not functional, therefore it's not makabel tuma. What about Rabbi Kiva? And therefore it's tar. Rabbi Kiva omer min amuchan, if it's ready for another use, again, in the same way, to stuff up the pipe or whatever it is, then it's tame. Shalom min amuchan, but if I put it in a place which is not min amuchan, therefore I designate, even though I used it once as a kli in a less than 3x3, now I'm indicating that it's not usable as 3x3, and therefore it's min ha mu, and therefore it's tahor, it's not considered a kli. Amar Ula says, v'itema Rabba Bar Chana, maybe Rabba Bar Chana says the name of Rabbi Yochanan, we're not sure. Hakol modim zarku ba'ashto divri hakol tar. Everybody agrees, whether you're Rabbi Eliezer, whether you're Rabbi who's the one? Whether you're Rabbi Eliezer, whether you are Rabbi Yehoshua, whether you're Rabbi Kiva, if I took that thing after I used it in the pot for a function, and I took it and I wung it into the garbage, it's no longer clear, everybody agrees that it's tahor. Okay? Hanichu, no, Hanichu, oops. Hanichu bekufsa divrei hakol tame. If I put it in a little bit of a, if I put it in a pot which said ready for reuse for the next bath job, then everybody agrees that it's tame. Even Rabbi Akiva would agree. I'm sorry. Even Rabbi Akiva would. Everybody would agree. Rabbi Akiva, Rav Shimon would agree that it is tame, because I'm declaring that not only did I use it once as a kli, even though it's small, I'm going to use it again as a kli, it's small. So the Gemara says lo neku elish talu bimagod oshenich lachar adelet. It's like, you know those bath towels that you hang up on these, instead of hanging up nicely, you throw them on top of your doorknob? That's the case. What if I took it and I chucked it somewhere which was semi-usable? I hung it from a doorknob, right? Maybe it's usable. Maybe I wanted to throw it away, but I was being lazy. Maybe I wanted to put it in a kub, so I was being lazy. I simply do not know. Rebbe Yezer Savar Midelo Zarki Ba'ashter, according to Rebbe Lazar, that would be called Mina Muchan. And therefore, since I didn't throw it into the garbage, therefore I have to be considered usable. Date iluya, your mind is on it. V'amai karile shalom min amuchan. So how come the Gemara says, how come the Mishnah says lo min amuchan if it really is min amuchan? Because you remember, according to Rabbi Eliezer, he says shalom min amuchan is tummy, it's still a kli. But everybody agrees that if you throw into a garbage, it's definitely not tummy, it's definitely not considered a kli. Therefore, he must consider hanging on top of a doorknob to be considered lo min amuchan. So if it's lo min amuchan, why is it considered lo min amuchan? If you're saying that it is min amuchan, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you're saying it is a kli. I put on the doorknob because I was too lazy to put it into the kufsa. Why are you calling that lo min amuchan? So the Gemara says, kari le shalom min amuchan to the gabi kufsa lo muchan hu, because it's not really muchan. If you really wanted to be super muchan, he would have put it into this barrel that says, I'm going to use this again. The fact that he throws on the doorknob, I can't really call it min amuchan, I call it lo min amuchan, but it's muchan enough to make it tameh, to make it a kli. Everybody good?
Does it have to be muchan to you or muchan to anybody?
Probably you.
The fact that you're
it's
not
your intentions which are concerned. I think it's your intentions. You're asking me whether something can be muksa for one person and not muksa for another person? I believe so. I think it's a psychological thing. I believe so. I believe everybody has their own little reality. I'm not sure, though. I'm not sure. Rabbi Yehoshua Savar Midelo, or maybe you go after the majority, I don't know. Rabbi Yehoshua Savar Midelo Hanichu B'Kufsa, the fact that I didn't put it back in the right place for reuse, Betuli Batle. So the Gemara says, Amai Karle Muchan. According to Rabbi Elazar, putting it on the back of the doorknob must have been Min HaMuchan, because Lo Min HaMuchan was putting it in the garbage. So he says, the Gabi Ashma Muchan Hu, because it's true, I don't want to use it because I put it on the back of the doorknob, and therefore it's not Makabel Tuma. However, garbage, but so I'm going to call it min hamuchan, but it's not min hamuchan enough to turn it into a kli, and therefore it cannot be mekabel tumah. Rabbi Akiva bitalu bimagod sabar Rabbi Lezer. So according to Rabbi Akiva, if it was hanging on the back of a doorknob or whatever it was, then he passes to Rabbi Lezer that would be considered reusable for functionality, and therefore it would be considered a keli, and therefore would be mekabel tumah, and you couldn't use it on Yom Tov for a candle, but when you put it on the back of the door, sorry, the case of the mago that was more like, I don't know, like maybe like on a shelf but not put away on a nice place. And Hanichwa Tadela, that was like a toss away. So Savalek Rabbi Yoshua. So he has intermediary errors where one case of chucking it on the side is Munchan, and the other case is not Munchan. In the case of Munchan, he passes like Rabbi Eliezer that you made it into Kli. And the lower case of chucking it was, but not all the way into the garbage, it was considered like Rabbi Yoshua and it was not good. Vahadabe Rabbi Kiva. And then Rabbi Kiva changed his mind. Vagabi the Rabbi Yoshua. He changed his mind, he agrees with Rabbi Yoshua. Which means that essentially we paskin that Rabbi Yoshua is right, and that if you don't put it in the garbage, as long as you don't put it back in the kufsa that says I must use this again, it's non-functional. If it's non-functional, it's not mekabel tumah because it's not a kli, and therefore you may use it for a candle wick on Yom Tov. Amar Rav mizikatani p'tilat abeged. So then Rav says, wait a second. I'm sorry, Gemara says mimai. So who's right? So Gemara says Amar Rav mizikatani p'tilat habeged. My ear the tefilat habeged lenei tefilat shel beged. Why did we learn that it was a tefila of a cloak and not a tefila from a cloak? You know, a corner from a cloak. My tefilat habeged zadayin beged hu. Therefore, the tefila is still considered part of the cloak. It's a cloak. Rabbi Kiva is right. Sorry, Rabbi Elazar is right. It was functional, and therefore I may not use it for wicks on Yom Tov because it's mekabel tuma because it's a kli even if it is less than 3x3. Okay. I'm sorry, I know I'm going very fast. And then we're up to the next Mishnah. Is that good? Should we continue on, or am I going so fast that I'm... Okay. I think this Gemara is quite a bit easier, actually, so let's take a look at this Gemara. Mishnah Lo Yikavadan Shofar Shel Beitza, this is pretty famous from our... from Hamamem Aleikin. Lo Yikavadan Shofar Shel Beitza, so you can't take a supporting tank. I can't take an egg. Poke a hole in it. Yimalena Shemen. Fill it up with shemen. The itnena al pi ner b'shvil shtemen atefet. So it drips into the bottom one. Vafilu hi shocheres. Rabbi Yehuda Matya. What we're talking about is here. The egg cup is over here. This is my ner. It's got a wick coming out of it. This is my egg. It's in the air space of the. This is my filler. This is my egg that has a hole in it. The oil is dripping slowly but surely into the lower one, which is actually actively on fire. According to Rabbi, who is this, Rabbi Yehuda? Yeah, Rabbi Yehuda says it's aser, even if it's a shocheres. We'll find out why the fact that this is not an egg, but it's actually made out of pottery. It's not useful. What? Oh, I'm sorry. Tanakama says it's aser. I apologize. Tanakama says it's Asher Afilu Shulcheres, and Rabbi Yehuda actually matches it. Aval im chibra hayotzer mitchila mutar mipnei shu kliyachad. But if I create a connection, like I glued the egg to the nair like this, if I made it like one piece and then it was dripping out, then I don't have a problem. Mipnei shu kliyachad. And the reason why is because I'm afraid. Actually, I might as well give away the reason why. I think we'll see in the Gemara. I'm afraid that what I may do is I may take, if it's not connected, I may take the egg off. Put a little oil in my salad, put the thing back on the holder which is above, and now what I've done is I've reduced the burn time of the candle. It's machloka exactly what the problem is, but let's assume that's the thing. I've reduced the burn time of the candle. Why would I think that a cheres is not a problem? Because a cheres is disgusting. You ever see like an earthenware thing, not glazed? You put oil in it, it turns like disgusting, you know, it's greasy and disgusting. Therefore, nobody would take it. It's less likely that somebody would take it and use it for their salad. Therefore, since I'm not worried about doing such a thing, it is mutter. This by itself, this is mutter d'oraita. The question is whether the rabbis were gozer not to do it, because I'm afraid that I'm going to take and steal the oil for my food. Rabbi Yehuda says we're not worried for such a thing. And everybody agrees that if it's connected, where I obviously can't take it off, then obviously there's no halachic problem.
What's the case where the reservoir, the shelving, you're saying it doesn't necessarily have to be, you think it has to be earthenware attached or is
no,
the shell attached?
I think either way. If I glue it on a shell or I glue it on earthenware, I don't think it makes a difference because I can't remove it. Oh, okay, sorry. Lo yimalei adam kara shel shemen. I can't take one pot that sits next to another pot, a cup. Lo yimalei adam kara shel shemen. V'yitena b'tzad aner. V'yitena rosh p'tila b'tolcha. V'shvil shetei sho evet. So essentially what I do is I got the wick burning up here. It dips, I guess, into the first one and then into the second one as well. It's like a double dip. Double dipping. V'yitein rosh ha'tfilah b'toch ha'avos feel shehei shoevetz, that it draws, Rav Yehuda matir. And I'm not allowed to do that either. I guess the assumption is I'll take away this kli and I'll use it for my salad, reducing the amount of oil that goes in. The question is, would I have known the first law from the second law and the second law from the first law? What's the difference between the two laws, one where it's in the airspace and the other one where it's lying next door and the wick is connected one to the other? Right, you're not going to put out the candle immediately by taking away the second one. You can take away the second one, take away the reservoir for a second, use a little bit of oil, then put it back in, and then take the wick, I guess, and edge it back in. Okay, so the Gemara says, Vitzricha, I need all these cases. Why to eat this? If I only learned the eggshell, the Ha'akamina Rabbanan, that's only the case where the Rabbanan would say it's Asher. The Kevin Deloma Isa, it's not disgusting. A shell holds the oil without becoming gross. So Atilis, Tipukimina, somebody's going to use it for their own salad or whatever it is, and therefore reduce the burn time. Avacheres din ma'isa, but if your feeder kli, if your reservoir is cheres, that's gross, nobody would touch it, and therefore Amai might have said, modulei the Rabbi Yehuda. Then Rabbanah would agree that Rabbi Yehuda was right, and therefore you're allowed to have a reservoir made out of cheres, which obviously is not true. Rabbanah do not accept it. V'yashvin and cheres, if I don't learn cheres, and how come Rabbi Yehuda? So that's why Rabbi Yehuda says that it's mutter. Because cheres, ew, nobody wants to touch it. Rabbi Yehuda says mutter. But, aval b'ahi, imam modu leho the Rabbanan. But if you're using an eggshell that Rabbi Yehuda felt was functional, they would agree with the Rabbanan that it's not gross. Somebody will likely use it for the salad, therefore reduce the burn time. Rabbi Yehuda would have ushered it. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda monitors both cases, and the Rabbanan ushered both cases. Is it okay?
There's something special about the eggshell. How about
just
the
cleaner
glass?
Oh, glass, I think, would be categorized as an eggshell.
I mean, is it that perhaps eggshell you would recognize that what it is?
No,
normally you don't use an eggshell.
No, the Gemara seems to be going very black and white here. Either you're gross and you won't use it, or you're not gross and you will use it. I'd have to say that glass would fall under the category of eggshell, and I don't know, can't think of anything else disgusting off the top of my head. It'd be grass. How about that? Grass, like astroturf. Astroturf would be, if I had astroturf bowl that had oil in it, since nobody would use it, that would be considered cheres. That's a weird case, but there you go. The Eon Ashmin Hanakhtarti, if I'd only learned about the case of the upper reservoir, whether it's cheres or whether it's a glass. Bahani Kama Rabbi Yehuda Mishum below Mifsak. Avakara de Mifsak emu modi lul Rabbanan. But when you have a whole ka'ara, which is not, you know, it's not like hanging in the air, it's not like a little shell, but I got a whole plate there, which is beautiful. I can use it for my salad, to pour some oil salad, so they would agree with the Rabbanan that somebody's likely to use it, and therefore I'm not allowed to do a double draw with an extended wick. You're saying wick?
I always imagine one wick was in the second one, and there was another wick connecting the two. Like,
would that work?
One wick with the two heads.
Well, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. See, I was thinking one wick, which was dipped like in the middle into its own thing, and then it extended out to the second one to double.
Because the fire is on the wick, it's drawn, so it would draw from the second one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Right.
I guess it's not your case. Now, I always had a problem because
it's almost like a siphon that you had the second wick, it would draw it, but you're probably right. It wouldn't draw it if it was.
Yeah, but there's something to what.
Like
I don't know if it would. I don't think
it.
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so. But I wouldn't think so.
Okay.
I wouldn't think so. The reason why mine is, but mine still has it uncomfortable because.
No, there's no picture. I just always imagined, you know, a bowl with a wick going into the other one. It was just drawing it in somehow.
A suction flow. I think that would apply to the first one. Yeah, I don't think so. Of course, in my description, I always had a little bit of a problem because if you're taking it out, since the wick with the fire is connected to the second bowl, the question is, would it be a chashash like you're shaking? I'm like, I'm not allowed to touch a candlestick, not only because it's muksa, because I may, you know, put out the fire. But I guess here there's no concern. Maybe the wick is long enough that I could take it out and put it back in without.
The way you're describing it, the wick is going into the first one, so it's drawing from there.
For the first one, therefore, the second one is not an issue because it's still dry, so to speak, in the middle. Yeah, I think that's why it's not a problem. I think that's the way it is. Again, I would double check with like these nice mishnayot that have pictures of them. But I think that's the way it goes. What?
It could break at the point of the fire, and if it does, then you're in trouble.
You mean if it's all one wick? Yeah, I guess in a case where you're absolutely safe, you know, maybe where, I don't know. It's hard to say. it's always hard. I always considered some threat here of if I move it, that I might turn out the fire directly as opposed to just removing the oil, which just reduces the burn time. But apparently Gemara is not bothered by it. So I'll just go on for now, but maybe looking up a graphic of it might pay off. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Aval Shum Delo Misak, Aval Kara, De Misaka Ema Modul Rabbana. V'i Ashmina Bahi, if I only learned in the second case with the two Karot, Kama Rabbana, Sakamri Rabbanan, that's the only case where the Rabbana said was Aser, Aval Bahanach Tarti, but the first two, Ema Modul Rabbi Yehuda De Tzricha. But then they would agree, why? Because in a case where a pot, that's why they said it's us, because I'm likely to take the pot and just remove it. But in a case where I've got this mechanism where one's dripping into the other, then I am not concerned that, and then the Rabbanan might agree with Rabbi Yehuda that nobody would be stupid enough to take that off, because they could see it actually dripping directly into the pot. Nobody would be stupid enough to use that oil for the salad. But the answer is no. They're always concerned, and Rabbi Yehuda is never concerned in all these cases. Vaita, next Gemara. V'im, a very short piece of Gemara. V'im chibra... If it's all connected as one thing, so where's the tamim chibra b'tzidu b'charasid mutar? What if you connected it with like lye and pitch, which means originally I had two and then I glued them together using super glue. So mutar. So where says v'hanan yotzer tanan, but we learned yotzer. It has to be one piece construction. So where says no, my yotzer k'ein yotzer. It doesn't mean that it has to be built from scratch as one piece. It means it has to be as if it was built from one scratch, which means you could attach it later on. Just a little piece of Gemara, and not at least I don't see much to it, but there's probably more than meets the eye. So Tanya Amar, we only have 7 minutes, so I'm going to chug along, 6 minutes. Tanya Amar, Rabbi
Yehuda. No,
8:10. 8:10 is Marav? Oh, okay.
Mincha.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We went to the Mishnah that the reservoir must be attached by a professional potter. However, then can the Braisa sanction the handiwork of a layman? This is to be talking about how
I was reading the word Kain Yotzer as being the original Yetzirah as in one piece from its construction. You're saying that it has to be done professionally rather than a slap job.
Right.
Okay. So, also good. So, Tanya, we learned in the Braita, Tosefta, actually. Amar Yehuda Pamachad Shivtenu Ba'aliyat Beit Nitza, the Lud. We were sitting in a house called Beit Nitza in Lud. Ve'viu lanu shvafer shol beitu maluna umaluha so what do we do? So we cracked it open, put a hole in it, and we set up an egg reservoir system. Obviously, possibly like Rabbi Yehuda. Does everybody have to see the place? What? You good? Everybody good?
Yep.
Okay. So the Gemara said, "Hayir Sham Rav Tarfon." I guess Rav Tarfon. I have Reish Tef, but I think it's Rav Tarfon. Uz Kainim below Anu Lanu Dava. They didn't say anything to us, so must be that must be Rabbi Yehuda's right and Chachamim are wrong. So or at least that's the way we paskin. I'm low. No, Misham Raya. There you have a Raya. Shiny Beit Nitza Dizrizenhain. Abein Siporai. That's because the people in Nitza are more careful. They would never use the egg oil for their own salad, as opposed to the Tzipori people who would. I tell you, this Gemara blows me away and we can't get into it. But essentially what this is saying is Zera depends on how firm you are. Which is very strange, I have to say. Usually, I always assume that once you make Xer, it applies for everybody at all times. Nonetheless, that's what this mission seems to be saying, that since we're not worried about it, apparently at that time, you can make Xer to a locality, which is not our understanding of how Xer works today, at least not my understanding, but anyway, not that we don't have time to really spend time at
Gar. How many times
you read some rabbis that doesn't apply to my that's where I give myself an individual hat there. But here I'm essentially saying that I only made this gezeira for a certain type of people. You're right. That's an issue right there. But this is like a humongous issue. At least you could say, I guess the gezeira, the bylaw must have been written, unless you are like the people in Bar Nitza, do not touch the egg. Now that's not the Mishnah that comes to us. But apparently that was their understanding at the time. I mean, that's, again, I have to say, if I was teaching to a bunch of high school kids, except maybe Chaim's class, I might avoid this issue because I really wouldn't want to. It's a complex issue. It brings up all kinds of questions about subjectivity of Xerot. Well, what do you mean about me, Rabbi? Could I do this thing a special way? Because could I play guitar on the 3 weeks? Because for me, it makes me sad.
You have
all kinds of situations.
Do you have Dibros Moshe?
No.
It just says there that it has an answer to your question. It says, where do we find rabbinic prohibitions relaxed to the zealous?
Okay, so I don't. We'll have to take a look at the Achron and see if he gives a good answer. Okay. But in that, I'll try to. Dibrot Moshe?
Dibrot Moshe, 26.
So that's Rav Moshe Feinstein on Gemara Shabbat. So we'll take a look if I get a chance. Anyway, so let's continue on. Grara Safla. What if I was dragging a bench? But Aliyata Deshaisha in a attic that had nice floors of marble. Leila Mi Rebbe Yitzchak Ben Elazar. And they were doing this in front of Rebbe Yitzchak Ben Elazar. So Amalei. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Avin. I'm sorry. Nitzahein. Avin Tzipora. I'm sorry. I read that wrong. I thought it was Aben Tzipora, that the Nitzim were better. No, it's just Nitzim, Desars, and period, Hain, period. Avin Tziporai. There was a guy named Avin from Tzipora. So I read that wrong anyway. Maybe that changes my philosophy. So Garis Afal Baliyat Deshayas Le'ila Mi Rebbe Yitzchak Bar Elazar. So we did this in front of Rebbe Yitzchak Bar Elazar. Amalei Ishtuke Lach. If I don't say anything to you right now, like Rabbi Yehuda wasn't told off when he was doing this, I guess this whole egg thing. Nafik minei churba, then a sword's going to go out of this. A terrible thing's going to happen. Now, I don't know if that means that he disagreed with that original story, but at least in this case, he feels that what Avin was doing is wrong. Because why? Gzeira al yitad shaisha, atu al yitad alma. Because I'm telling you that you can't do it. Because there's a gzera that just because you're not allowed to move a safsal on regular ground, on a shayish ground, even though you're not going to make any holes, any ditches, because I'm afraid that somebody will always move a safsal, which is interesting because we know modern times you can in fact do such a thing as long as you have the right kavana. It all comes from this gemara. So Reish Kanishta de Batra, there was the head of a Beit Knesset in a place called Batra. Gara Safsla Le'ilam Mirab Yirmiya. So we did the whole thing in front of Yirmiya. Rav Yirmiya Rabba from Rav Yirmiya the Great. So Amar Lei, Rav Yirmiya Rabba says to him, Kiman. So who are you passing like, buddy? Kirab Shimon, if you're saying you pass like Rav Shimon, that you're really a firm guy, you pass like Rav Shimon, because Rav Shimon says that you're allowed to grab, he says there's no such thing as a non-kavana malacha. So therefore, if I grab a sapsal and move it along the floor, make a ditch, as long as it wasn't my attention, I'm perfectly fine. But if you're going to say you pass like Rav Shimon, it says, no way, Amar Dam Rav Shimon B'gdolim, that's only when you're lifting a big, a gigantic bench. Deloeshar, because you couldn't lift it up on your shoulders. But Katani Miyama, who said that Rabbi Shimon would allow you to do that with a small bench? You should have lifted that up on your shoulders and avoided the whole problem. Upligi de Ulam, this argues with the whole thing with Ula. Ula disagrees with this whole theory. Why the Amar Ula Machloki Pektanim? You're wrong. The place where Rabbi Shimon argued, I believe, was Rabbi Huda, and he said that you're allowed to drag the Sapsal. That's the case with small ones. Of Al Gedolim Debiakol Mutter, you're wrong. It's more Mekil. If it's heavy, everybody agrees it's mutter. So Mati Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef asked a question. Rav Shimon Omer, Gora Adam Matiki Sev Safsal. You're allowed to drag a, this is the original one, a person is allowed to drag a bed and a seat and a bench. As long as your intention was not to dig up a ditch. So Katani Gedolim, the Katani Katan, look there, I got little things, I got big things. Which means that it doesn't make a difference. Rav Shimon says it's always okay. And Rabbi Yehuda says, that it's always not okay. So how could this guy, Rabbi Yirmiya Rabba, tell him, this Beit Knesset guy, that you did the wrong thing, because he only said that in the case of big, but never in the case of small, vice versa. Then his ul is wrong, because he said they're only arguing in the case of small, not big. No, big, not small. And the other guy said they're only arguing in the case of small, not big, but that's not how this reads. According to this, Rabbi Yehuda always says that big is not okay. All sizes is not okay. Rabbi Shimon says all sizes are okay. So kasha l'tarvayu, it's a kasha on both of them. It's kasha on ulu, it's a kasha on Rabbi Yirmiya Rabba. It's an all or nothing. So Ula matars the time, Rabbi Yirmiya Rabba matars the time. No problem. They'll each explain to you based on their own logic. Let's try Ula first. Ula matars the time, mita duma kaksa. Very simple. When you read that mission and you thought it was a gigantic mita, it wasn't. It was itty bitty mita. They're all little bitty ones. That's what the machoket is. But by gedolim, where I can't lift it up, everybody would say that it's okay. Rav Yirmiya Rabba, you can see this coming a mile away, right? Rav Yirmiya Rabba says, "Matas tavi kisa duma lamata." It was a big kise. Everybody's arguing about big kise, but when it comes to little things, there's no way Rabbi Shimon would allow you to do it because you'd be lifted. You can lift it up by your shoulder as easy as you could drag it. And therefore, there's no way Rabbi Shimon lets you do it where you could get away with it in an easier way without getting into trouble. Everybody follow? So Mativ Rabba, I got a question for you. Rabba says, "Now hold on a second. Mochre, this is not Rav Yirmiya Rabba. This is Rabba." Mochre ksut, mochrim kedarkan. If you're selling clothes which have shotness on them, you're allowed to wear them while you're selling them. says you're allowed to wear them. You know, look at this fine cloak I'd like to sell you. And you're allowed to drape it over you like a model to sell stuff. They didn't have mannequins. They wore it themselves. As long as you're not wearing it to protect yourself from the heat in the heat and from the winter in the winter. That is, everybody knows that you're wearing it for show. Your kavana, not even everybody knows, but your kavana is not to wear clothes for the sake of clothes. Everybody knows that you're a mannequin. You're a mannequin. So v'hatznuin, but the frumies, the people who are very careful about not wearing shatnez, mafshilin b'maklacharim. They used to have these dummies like a stick. They used to hang it up on the stick, and that's the way they would sell. So it didn't sell so well. I'm not going to put shatnez on their body. V'ha'acha, that's this case, which means the efshel and the avid ketznuin. Even though it was theoretically possible for these shop owners to act like the tznuim, they were given the right, the permission not to act like tznuim. Who does that sound like? That sounds like in the case of little tiny itty bitty chairs, even though I could lift them up on my back, or itty bitty little sapsalim, even though I could lift them up on my back, I don't have to. Just like these guys who are selling their cloaks, even though the tznuim are not going to do it. They're going to sell because it's hanging on a stick. Ah, everybody can hang on a stick. I know, but they don't have to because it's not a problem with shotness. Here, even though they could act like tznuin, they were not forced to. The chi katanim dami, that's exactly like katanim. Even though they could have lifted up the chairs, they weren't. They shouldn't be forced to. So the chi lo mitkavin shari. The reason why it's permissible is because they didn't have kavana. And Rabbi Shimon lechatchila. And the reason why he says it's not b'diavad if you can't lift up the chair. Even if you could lift up the chair, I don't care because the kavana is not there. If there's no kavana, there's no foul. So Gemara says, tiyufta the rabba. The Rabbi Yirmiyah bit Rabba to Yufta. So Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabba, who says that they were only arguing about big and never arguing about small, is shot out of the water. That leaves you either Ula's opinion that they're only arguing on big but not on small, or the simple read of the Mishnah that Rabbi Shimon maters in all cases and Rabbi Yehuda ushers in all cases. But everybody would agree. No, but Rabbi Yirmiyah's case where he says that everybody agrees with small is clearly not the case based on the shot as far. Oh wait, I'm sorry, Mishnah. I'm sorry. Hamachabet aner mitvei shehu mityarim bnei nachrim. You can put out a canvas. You're worried about Goyim coming to beat you up. Okay. Because we're there already. Okay. All right, I apologize for not getting to the Mishnah. Have a good evening.